volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. You're listening to Love in the 21st Century. It is hosted by Tamara, who's not here tonight, so I'm sitting in. My name is Desiree Susan, and I'm here with Guillermo Mash and Edward Cavone. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live moments, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connection humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, and one-third compassion training. And now we are going to hear a song by the Shins called Cubes. Okay, we are back on Love in the 21st Century, and tonight we are going to be continuing on the discussion we've had all month about what is love exactly. That's a good question. What is love you think about when you think about love? And if any of you out there would care to join in on the conversation, please do so. The phone number is 530-895-1114. Again, it is 895-1114 if you have anything to discuss with us about love. I'm going to start off by talking about the Greeks. And I find it interesting that they have six words for love instead of just one. And I'm going to talk about what they are and what they entail. The first one that they have is called Eros, better known as sexual passion. The first kind of love was Eros, named after a Greek god of fertility, and represented the idea of passion and desire. But the Greeks didn't always see it as something positive as we tend today. They viewed it as something kind of dangerous and irrational, and thought that love could take hold of you and possess you, which is something that some people like C.S. Lewis thought. Eros involved a loss of control that frightened Greeks, which is odd because losing control is precisely what many people now seek in a relationship. The second one is philia, deep friendship. This is which the Greeks valued far more than the base of sexuality of Eros. It is deeply concerned with camaraderie, friendship, and brother-in-arms that fought side by side on a battlefield. It is about showing loyalty to your friends and sacrificing for them, as well as sharing your emotions with them. We can all ask ourselves how much of this philia we have in our lives. It's an important question in an age where we attempt to have a bunch of friends on Facebook or followers on Twitter. The third one is ludius, or playful love. And this idea of playful love, which is referred to as attraction between children or young lovers, I think of this as maybe love, like in high school or junior high, or flirting with someone and having a crush on them, which is basically what they considered it. Flirting and teasing in the early stages of a relationship are what this is about. Bantering, laughing with friends, or going out dancing. Four is agape, or love for everyone. This is what I think of when I think of how I try and love. The fourth love, and perhaps the most radical or selfless love, this is a love that is extended to all people, whether family members or distant strangers. It was later translated into the origin of our word charity. It is in dangerous decline in many countries. Empathy levels in the U.S. have declined sharply over the last 40 years, with the steepest fall occurring in the past decade. And basically, this whole idea is about empathy and loving human beings as human beings, and it's what the Buddhists call universal loving kindness. The fifth idea is pragma, or long-standing love. Another Greek love was a mature love known as pragma. This was the deep understanding that developed between long married couples. Pragma is about practicing making compromises to help the relationship work over time and showing patience and tolerance. The psychoanalyst Eric Fromm said that we expend too much energy on falling in love and need to learn more how to stand in love. Pragma is precisely about standing in love, making an effort to give rather than just receive love. And the sixth one is what they call fluata, I'm not pronouncing that right, I know, or the love of self. And this is something we talk about a lot on the show. Loving of self is one type, they said the Greeks thought of as unhealthy variety associated with narcissism, where you become self-obsessed and focused on personal fame, and the other is the healthier version enhanced with wider capacity. The idea is that if you like yourself and feel secure in yourself, you have plenty of love to give to others. And the Buddhist-inspired concept of self-compassion. So, those are the six aspects of love that the Greeks thought of, which I found to be interesting because it goes in line with the languages of love that we have, too. Is there anything that comes up for you when thinking about those types of love?
That actually sounds pretty thorough. Greeks really have it on.
Oh, and I forgot. This is Edward Kavan. He's also my lover.
How you doing?
Also known as my boyfriend. I thought it might be interesting to talk about love together in the studio here. It's always interesting to get a new perspective from someone you're in a relationship with. And then Guillermo Mash, some of you know from, what's the name of your radio show?
Without a Peace and Justice. Oh. Peace and Social Justice. A few things, that's right. I had you on the show once.
Oh, yeah.
In comedy. She's coming on. I told her to and did do some comedy. But thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I'm going to now talk about the different languages of love and ask some questions about that. Just one second here. Okay, so there are actually five ways to express and experience love that a psychologist are the love languages. The first one is gift-giving. The second one is quality time. The third is words of affirmation. The fourth is acts of service or devotion. And the fifth one is physical touch. So this was developed from a personal marriage and family therapist who realize that people would show each other different types of love, and they'd have misunderstandings because some people would not understand they were receiving gifts that the person, their spouse, was telling them they loved them, while they wanted to hear affirmations or be given compliments and things like that. So I think in thinking about this, I was wondering what my love language was, and I realized that I happen to be one that likes kind of a variety of love languages. I sometimes will like to be told affirmations, but mostly I think my love language is quality time, because I grew up in a household that didn't show much quality time to me. They didn't. My mom did, but my stepdad and dad were never around, so I basically have realized that quality time is what I love the most, and it, probably the love that you feel the most love from. What about you,
Edward? I agree with all your time. One thing I've really enjoyed about our relationship so far is that we watched zero TV together. We're all doing something, doing an activity, going for a walk, arts and crafts, letter writing. It's been very healthy. I like it.
Yeah, so if anyone out there wants to call in, again, the number is 895-114 if you'd like to talk to us about anything to do with what you think is love or about languages, love, or anything we discussed so far, please do. So, I guess this brings up for me what exactly is love and what it isn't. I had to do some soul searching, I guess, to realize what I thought love was, because I feel like it's many things. It's yes, a word, it's a verb, it's an action, it's a choice, it's a lot of things, I think. And that's why I went towards describing the different areas of which the Greeks had brought up for love, because I think that it is choosing to love people for being human and loving their spirit and loving them unconditionally, no matter if you know them or not. As one who has been to the meditation center and kind of followed the path and way of Buddhism, I have come to realize that I can tell people I love them, and that I do really mean it when I say I love them, because I love and respect and honor their spirit, and I think that that's a healthy place to be in our society. I don't think you have to be friends or in a relationship with someone to love them. I think that you can, you know, just value someone as a person and as a spirit soul, and I think that there would be a lot more love in society if we followed that. And something else that I thought was near and dear to my heart, which I know is with Guillermo too, is the differentiation and how we treat people in different socioeconomic statuses, and this also falls into line with the homeless population, obviously. I know that I see a lot of people who are not so kind and loving and understanding of the homeless people, and it kind of makes me go, well, why is that? And it's because of fear, I think, that, or because people don't understand how to love people as people, and instead of loving people who make less money than them, they don't understand, so they don't wrap their head around showing that unconditional love. What do you think, Guillermo?
I mean, there's an age-old world that love as thyself, and a lot of people just take that literally, but I think a lot of people that have that fear and anger are not really in good love relationships with themselves.
Right.
You know, I see that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Maybe anger, there may be pain, maybe something there that, you know, causes them to look down on people or at people a certain way, less lovingly than they could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's a couple of things. For one, it's fear. And for two, people look at that and they see that that could be them, and that scares them. And it's a good reminder of what could happen to any of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that a lot of people, as with anything, get their love patterns and relationship patterns from however they were raised. I think you can learn. I've obviously learned a lot about how to love from changing of myself and deciding to be a loving person. I wasn't raised in a very loving environment, and that gets me to one of the points I wanted to bring up, was how our society and generations' love patterns and relationships have changed from our parents. And one thing that Guillermo, you brought up, was the bed size.
Yeah, when I was a little kid and went and visited aunts and uncles and other folks, full size, man, full size beds. If you have the marriage, you're in a full size bed on the couch if you want. Now it's a queen size or king size, and I was kidding, we're in Desiree in the studio, and I was like, you know, you're in trouble with your partner, and they're like, let's go out and search for a king bed, need a little more space. But that's just one of the most simple things. The other one before turning over bed was the simplest one, is just seeing I had a lot of aunts and uncles, and there was a lot of commitment to marriage. You know, people stuck out, you know, long-term marriages. My parents were married 58 years before my dad, and I've got tons of stories of folks that are been in, you know, my mom's generation that were married many years. So I think that's changed a lot, too, where people just, for whatever reason, whatever space they're at, they don't feel that they can, you know, deal with what things that come up in marriage, and a lot of things come up.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I agree with that, actually. There is, I don't know a lot about the love of the older generation. There is a perception that there was a willingness to doubt their problems. But I also wonder if it's because they didn't have access to dating apps like we do now. If they had access to a lot more partners, would they have been, you know, would they have checked out other options versus worked out problems they have at home? I don't know.
So do you think that people were less, more monogamous because of lack of dating?
I don't know. It's just something I thought about. But
Yeah, I also wonder if people stayed in marriages out of lack of going to counseling and things like that, because it seems like there's a lot more marriage and family therapists and counseling that goes on in today's world. I think from when I was a child, I noticed a lot more people leaving relationships because they don't want to put up with abuse. And I think that's one thing that I did notice as a kid was that people, my grandparents, they stayed in relationships that were abusive or less than they wanted because of they didn't want to be a failure or have a divorce or leave the kids with like break the kids up and pick the family up. And now I think that people come to this realization that if they're not in love and happy, that it's better for them to get a divorce than keep the kids in a marriage around parents that are fighting all the time. That's one thing I think I noticed in today's relationships.
Well, with the older generations, there are many instances of people being married for, you know, 5-6 decades. I don't have a lot of examples in my own peer group of people that have really had a lot of good long-term marriages. Usually seem less about 2 to 4 to maybe 6 years at the tops, and then they're done. They've got kids, and they just move on. There's no willingness to stick out the problems.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. I definitely feel like my parents' generation also, they were, I don't know if they were more loyal or just didn't want to, they couldn't be tolerated, or not tolerated, they worked on things more, maybe. Because I don't know very many people who've been married for many years. I mean, obviously, I'm only 35. I guess that is different.
I can only think of, like, of all the people I know, among my friends, there's only 3 of them that have been married, like, you know, a significant amount of time. Everyone else had the quick relationship, super love at first, there were problems, and then they were done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's where, let's go back to one thing I found. Let's see.
I think it sends a, this add in, and that's quiet in a minute. You know, I think when your children see strife or, you know, whatever is being dealt with, and their parents don't deal with it, and they very quickly just walk away from the relationships, it sends a devastating message to their kids that this is okay if you don't feel, if you feel uncomfortable. Or if your parents, there's myriads of reasons, a lot of them come down to money. So if you have a money conversation and you're arguing about money, that somehow that's okay just to walk away from a marriage because of that. So I think I would recommend people are a little more cognizant of the behaviors that you make as a parent and how it affects your kids.
Right. Oh, definitely. I can vouch for that. I remember as a child, I had really no clue what love was, what real love was. I can say with certainty that I know what love isn't.
And that process of elimination.
Well, so just coming from my background of having my mom get into a very abusive relationship when I was 3 years old, I quickly saw that love, living in fear, walking on eggshells, and being told to change yourself and be perfect for the person. It's, and having to feel like you're less than or not enough for someone, or treating their kids or their family as less than they should be. My mom was in a very abusive relationship where this man was an alcoholic, and he put fear into me and her and everyone around him, and it basically never gave us room to grow and allow our personalities to shine through. We were always so scared of showing who we really were and being able to be loving. It's really scary to be having to, like, guard yourself and having to be quiet and silenced because you're always fearful. And so I learned really early on that that's what love isn't. It's not having to change yourself. In fact, I think that love is acceptance and love is compassionate, and especially in a romantic relationship, I do agree that there is that loving people don't know kind of thing. But also in a romantic relationship, I think it is, you know, it's not just this whole getting into a relationship, being excited and having a honeymoon phase and then fading out. That's kind of what we're talking about with the divorce and the giving up too early kind of thing. I think that love is unconditional, and, you know, say you screw up and you did something that person doesn't really like or understand, that's working through that and saying, you know what, it's okay, I'm here, and being there and really showing up and really giving yourself to that person and being there for them and them being there for you. That's what I think love is. It's not having expectations and having a bunch of demands put around it and having limits on, you know, if you do this, then I'm not going to love you anymore. And that's, so basically that's what I think about love. What do you think when you love?
Well, I think the Greeks really did nail it with the different levels, because I felt all of those different types of loves at various parts of my life, starting with, you know, the obvious physical attraction, lust, and then, you know, love for siblings, and so on and so forth. See, like, my own past, too, is, you know, I lost my dad at a pretty young age, and my mom eventually got remarried, but they're more like mates now than they are like lovers. They don't spend a lot of time together, they don't dote on each other, there's no love letters. So I really think that one key to keeping a healthy relationship is to continue to do all those things and show the love and to engage the person and to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
You can't stop doing those things and expect it to be instant.
Okay. Well, it's time to do our underwriting here, and I thank you guys for listening out there. Love of the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of CFR supporters and by Chico Theater Company, creating live theater since 2003. Chico Theater Company presents Gilbert and Sullivan's swashbuckling adventure, The Pirates of Penzance, from April 28th till May 21st. Performances on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 and a Sunday matinee at 2. Tickets at chicotix.com and at the box office, and 894-3282. Share the magic of live theater at the Chico Theater Company. And here is a... Will Durst.
We'll later.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Durst.
We'll do Mr. Durst
for you. We'll do Mr. Durst later. I wanted to spin real quick because I don't want blankets to take, never have. So when you guys have a great conversation around loving and showing love, also dark side being a, you know, domestic abuse or like an abusive relationship, I think in those types of situations, it's really important for your kids to be in a loving relationship. And especially if the mom is being domestically abused and verbally abused, that she has the ability to walk away and communicate that with her children. So often, you know, people get trapped in these relationships, these abusive relationships, well, for most if not their lives.
Oh, definitely.
Positive examples are so important. Yeah, because that's who we learn from, is those people that we see and how they handle their problems.
Yeah.
Finding better examples on how to deal with these things is part of the key, I think, to find meaningful love.
Well, yeah, and like you said, you can definitely get trapped in the aspect of being in an abusive relationship when you've seen your parents be in an abusive relationship. It's like a cycle, and that's why they call it the abuse circle, like cycle of abuse, because you see it and then you start to live out those relationships. Even though you don't want to, I've done it myself, where I've dated abusive people, and it's hard to get out of, because once you're in it, once you're in cycle of, you know, letting someone be mean to you or control you or name calling you, they start to demean you and you start to feel stupid and you go, well, I guess it's okay, you know, I don't think that I'm this way, but they love me, they say they love me. It's really confusing, especially when someone tells you they love you and then they show you that they're less than nice to you. It's really confusing. So it's definitely hard to get out of an abusive relationship, and that's why it is important, if you have been had abusive people in your life, to focus on calling in those people that are not abusive, because I know firsthand it's very difficult. So there's that. And I was also wanting to bring up one of my favorite people, Brene Brown. I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there have heard of her. She's known for talking about shame and vulnerability. And that's another thing that I wanted to bring up, is what I think about love is vulnerability. And Austin Nguyen, who's Henry Miller's wife, has a quote that says, "Life shrinks and expands in proportion to one's courage." And I happen to think that love shrinks and expands in proportion to one's courage. If you have the courage to be vulnerable and to show your secrets and open up and show your shadow self to another person that you don't normally show, then you can have true intimacy. And that's what I think that real loving, good relationships are, is intimacy. And being able to show your inner imperfection, vulnerable, and feel softer. And so from the book, Gifts of Imperfection by Brene Brown, I'm going to read an excerpt from that. "Love will never be certain, but after collecting thousands of stories, I'm willing to call this a fact. A deep sense of love and belonging is an irreducible need of all men, women, and children. We are biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love, to be loved, and to belong. When these needs are not met, we don't function as we are meant to. We break, we fall apart, we grow numb, we ache, we hurt others, we get sick. There are certainly other causes of illness, numbness, and hurt, but the absence of love and belonging will always lead to suffering. It took me 3 years to whittle this definition down from executive interviews. Let's try it on. While I have personally and professionally agonized over the definition of love, I have to admit that it has fundamentally changed the way I live and parent. When I'm tired or stressed, I can be mean and grumpy. Especially towards Steve, my husband. If I truly love Steve, and oh man, I do, then how I behave every day is as important, if not more important, than saying I love you every day. When we don't practice love with the people we claim to love, it takes us a lot. It's a lot of us. Incongruent living, exhausting. It's also pushed me to think about the important differences between professing love and practicing love. During a recent radio interview about my research, the host asked me, "Can you love someone and cheat on them or treat them poorly?" I didn't have much time, so I gave the best answer I could based on my work. I don't know if you can love someone and betray them or be cruel to them, but I do know that when you betray or behave in an unkind way towards them, you are not practicing love. And for me, I don't just want someone who says they love me. I want someone who practices that love for me every day. These definitions have forced me to acknowledge that cultivating self-love is not optional. If I want to practice love with my family and friends, I have to start with me. So there's that. There's the quote. And that's something that we've talked about a lot in the show and in the past is self-love. And that's something that I've had to work on myself a lot and to bring into life the quality friends and loved ones that I have now. Because, like I said, as someone who's been raised in an abusive household and told that you're not worthy of love or no one's going to love you, it's very difficult to believe that. And that's something that I've had to work on, is focusing on being emptying love and knowing that I'm worthy of love. How would you think that you show yourself love?
With self-love, you have to make the time to take care of yourself and not treat yourself like an afterthought. You have to give yourself the best food. You have to really think about the things you're doing and not just act out, automatically. When it comes to love, though, like I've always kind of believed in more of like a show, not tell, because you could tell someone you love them in one breath and then mistreat them in another. You know, it's how you act towards that person instantly is, I think, how you really show up. Like, cleaning up your backyard.
Yeah. How do you think that you show self-love, Guillermo?
Well, I think I've had a lot of really cool things that you could extrapolate, but it's just really be present for yourself and knowing, you know, where your emotions lie and where they're at. I mean, a lot of times people tend to maybe lash out at someone or say something they really shouldn't have said because they're angry about something that has nothing to do with that person. I mean, that happens all the time. You have a lousy day at work, you come home. You know, there's that age-old myth where you kick something, meet somebody, you know, it has nothing to do with those people. So
right.
I think you need, for a self-perspective, you need to be able to deal with yourself and the things that happen to you, not to project them onto others.
Right. Yeah, not snort yourself up with emotions and hand that bleed over to the people you really love.
Right.
It's tough to do, but I think that's probably one of the big challenges with communication with people is keeping your own internal strife, not bleed that out to other people around you.
Can you give me an example of something what you do to love yourself? Is there any examples?
Let me think on that one for a second.
Okay. Well, you can think on that one.
Why don't we go to Will Durst? This would be a great time for Will Durst. We're on People Power Radio.
Will Durst here with the joyous words about the threat of nuclear war that is currently spiked like the needle of a meat mama in a lava flow. While President Trump busies himself dropping healthy payloads of democracy on various Mideast missions, North Korea's Kim Jong-un is kicking demilitarized sand in her face, sticking his nuclear tongue out, and wagging thumbs in it. Not even his own thumbs. Could be his uncle's thumbs. It's like a brand new version of the old Cold War with a little kimchi on the side. Don't know why the Biden leader is so angry. Maybe feels a little less than after being supplanted atop the prestigious wackiest leader with the weirdest haircut list. A mission that's been a fan for ages. It's a legacy award. Experts agree to take the peril a little more seriously if Pyongyang had a more efficient delivery system than a team of Muskoxen. But the scare is legitimate enough for Vice President Mike Pence to rattle a few sabers on the south end of the DMZ, where he said the U.S. was going to abandon its failed pursuit of strategic patience, which sounds suspiciously like setting up a fly ride or someone's going out without dinner again. President Trump even reversed his campaign pledge to label China currency manipulator in hopes that North Korea's adult neighbor will keep an eye on the region's juvenile delinquent and deliver economic spanking if necessary. China has a vested interest in nothing happening to us until we pay back the $1 trillion we owe them. It's all very thrillingly exciting. So much so that every day without a mushroom cloud is a victory, which some might claim is a little too exciting. For KZFR Radio, I'm Will Durst.
Okay, welcome back to Love in the 21st Century. We are here talking with Edward Kumon and Mesa Desert about what it is and throwing around some ideas of what it is and what it isn't. And we just left off with you talking about self-love and maybe giving some examples of what you think self-love is and how you have shown yourself love.
Well, things are pretty good for me right now, things considered. But there are a few things that are out of balance. And so I have been experimenting with meditation and energy work. And after doing that for about an hour, which felt delicious to take that time and just sit down and just think about the cause of where my uncomfortable feelings are coming from, I went home and cleaned for like 4.5 hours. And that felt like just about the nicest thing I could do for myself to just metaphorically and physically clean, and just with all that extra clutter laying around constantly reminded me of problems that felt like just about the nicest thing I could do for myself. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things I like to do for you too, is I go over there and I'll help you clean and do your honey, do dishes and walk your dog, and those are ways that I show you that I care, and I also need to do that for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a good thing. I mean, I think people, however they feel comfortable or will show themselves love, I think is a good thing. I think the way that I have been showing self-love over the last, I don't know how long, is more acceptance of myself and less shaming, because I think that internal voices really reflect how we treat ourselves and how we treat other people in the long run. My internal voice used to not be so nice at all. In fact, almost every day when I would get stressed out or be angry, I'd start telling myself how dumb I was, and it's the truth. I'm telling you this out there and to you and everyone because it's the truth, and I want to, you know, have people, sure people can relate to it. I've definitely been at the lowest point in my life, not so nice to myself, and not eating very well, not really caring about myself, putting myself last, always taking care of other people, and saying no or yes. Out of fear of saying no when I really wanted to say yes to something and go do something that was inside of my comfort zone, or not outside of my comfort zone, so I didn't do it. But now I've been learning how to say yes when I want to and no when I don't feel comfortable with something. I've been treating myself really nicely, and I've been accepting that there are some things about myself that society might not understand or isn't part of the status quo, like fit into a little box type thing, you know. I like to be outlandish, and that's okay.
I agree. One of the toughest personal changes I've had in my life and growing up is to quiet my internal voice and to stop being so mean to myself. And as I say so many mean things to myself, and things I would never say to another person. If I said it to another person, there would be a fight. So there's no reason that we have to mistreat ourselves that badly. And also embracing absolute honesty about what it is that you want and what you're looking for, and being flexible on that and compromising those things that we are looking for. Because if you're being fake about something, then you're going to get that back. Mm-hmm. If you're being truthful about something, that really increases your actually getting what it is that you're looking for. And
right. Well, and I think that's very true in terms of ownership. In fact, I talked about that for radical honesty and being radical to yourself, because the thing is that, you know, you can think that you want a certain thing or like someone enough to tell them that you are interested in them, you're not really interested in, you know, like, say you pretend to be, like, into someone's not, and then 3 months go by, and all of a sudden you're like, I don't even really like going gambling. Why am I going gambling? Because I told you I liked it, and, you know, now we've been going gambling because we think we've been gambling. And so that's part of, like, relationships usually tend to go haywire, I think, is people thinking they're into something just to like something that pretend they like it into. And so that's very true, is really focusing on what you want.
In the past, when I have tried the dating scene, I felt like I was trying to kind of be a chameleon a little bit and just trying to be the person that I thought the person wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And then, with the absolute honesty, I tried the dating and immediately could tell with a lot of the dates or people I was, you know, on a date with that I'm not really into this person and they're not really into me. And I just walked away from this situation. And, you know, it makes you feel a little bit lonely sometimes, but ultimately, you know, I knew at a time that probably not compatible, so just as well to not be a relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't need that physicality with someone that bad where I'm put myself in a situation where I have to do things or just, you know, this is not what I'm into.
Yeah, well, I think that any time that you have to not be part of yourself, that's where you're showing lack of love and lack of self-honesty. I think that being honest with yourself is loving yourself and vice versa. So that's interesting. Okay. Well, we're getting towards the end of the show, and we've talked a lot about what love is and some different ideas about it. And I had some other things to read to you from Brené Brown, because she's one of my favorites. Speaking of love, I really love her because she's vulnerable and she shows us her heart and tells us, oh yeah, you know, I've been there too. And she encouraged you all to look her up on YouTube. She has some really good TED Talks on vulnerability and shame. And I know she has at least 3 books, maybe I think more, but I've read a few of her books and watched her TED Talks, which are amazing. So if you haven't seen that or you need to rewatch it and remind yourself of that, then you should do that.
Sometimes I think self-love, too, is being a little bit selfish in a negative way, making sure that you can meet all of your obligations, that you make the time to actually take care of yourself and not give all of your time to something. You know, you really have to take care of yourself to be able to love a person correctly, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that that's something I talked about last time was if you things I gave a reference to wildfire, if you get caught up in the wrong thing and you don't have defensive space to protect yourself, you can get carried away by living out someone else's passion, desires, and not caring for yours and taking the time to go after your dream. It's easy to, you know, all of a sudden a week will go by and you've done nothing to work on your own goals if you're not caring and concerned about it.
Because you're undercutting your own sense of happiness, which is going to affect the relationship as a whole, I think.
Yeah. So, this is something I wanted to read. The 5 doable ways to increase in your life. Brene Brown says, can we increase our ability to be loved? She talks about what wholeheartedness means and how you can take a few steps to cultivate it. Let's see. She says that people who deeply believe that they were worthy of love and belonging, regardless of circumstances, unlike the majority of us, who think, okay, I'm worthy of love and belonging, but I'll be super worthy if I get promoted, or if I'll be super worthy if I lose 10 pounds, these folks believe they were lovable and that they had a place in the world, and those beliefs translated into specific choices they made every day. They were aware, they recognized shame, and they knew how to deal with it, and they recognized vulnerability, and they were willing to feel it rather than to ignore it. And I definitely think that's a huge thing in terms of love and feeling more love is knowing that you're unconditionally worthy of it. You don't have to be pretty or way less or skinny for a guy to love you or a woman to love you or have the right job. It's kind of like the premise of being happy along the way. You're worthy of love and loving along the way of whatever your journey is. And then the next one is letting go of exhaustion. Everybody in the world says that you need to work less in order to live a fuller and more connected life. The reasons are simple. Exhaustion is a symbol of our culture. Self-worth become net worth. We live doing so much and with so little time that anything unrelated to the to-do list, like taking a nap or reading a book, act creates stress. Wholehearted people, on the other hand, know when to stop and rest. And I think that's true. That's kind of what you were talking about, taking time out for yourself to know that you rest or that you need to work on what you want to feel good and be worthy of that. And the next one is creating joy. And painting your ground. All of us were made to make things. During my studies, I found a surprising piece of data. There is no such thing as a creative or non-creative person. Every single person begins creative. Individually, childhood, the creative expressions range from coloring or finger painting to dancing, singing, or learning. What was the most fascinating was the person never talked about learning how to be creative, just say it were. As adults, what keeps us from being creative, from painting, cooking, scrapbooking, doodling, knitting, rebuilding, or writing, is what I call conversing with a close cousin of the shame gremlin. People who say I'm not good enough, or what, why am I the one with dangling modifiers, or I'm not a real sculptor, I'm a total poser. In other words, hang ourselves into stopping. And I think that this is a really, really good example of what people do. They keep themselves from creating and being loved and being creative because they feel shame or compare themselves. And I heard a quote once, can you compare yourself to what everyone else is doing instead of just doing your either look vain or come off a short end. Recently at work, I had a guy who was talking about how his daughter was painting, and she wasn't necessarily what anyone else would call good at painting. She was probably 6 years old, and she was getting out emotions, or she was showing feelings of anything, love and anger and different emotions through painting. And I think that this is kind of what that's talking about. It's like everyone can do things that are creative if they let themselves.
I call that grass the day's good. Maybe.
And then the next one about cultivating love is acting calm. None of us get calmer by telling ourselves to calm down. We get it by understanding what calm is, being able to see clearly if we are not overreacting to a situation, or listening to understanding, by letting ourselves feel the vulnerability of the moment, the call from the doctor, the meeting, or the angry boss, and then managing that feeling. And I think that that's so important because I think that's really a lot to meditation and learning how to be non-reactive. Basically, when something comes up that you might, oh man, that's horrible, start reacting and snapping at someone. Instead of that, like taking the time to breathe and calm yourself down. And then think about it clearly, as you're never going to say what you actually mean or angry or think really when you're angry. So I think this comes down to being less reactive and more non.
To avoid that drone.
Yeah, that's it. That's what you want to call it. And then the next one is, let's see, making more time for fooling around. She says that I noticed in my research that whole people tended to fool around a lot. This does not describe their behavior, because I didn't know what this behavior was. It's such a foreign concept to me. I couldn't even name it correctly until I was sitting in the backyard watching my kids jump on a trampoline, and all of a sudden I said, these cousins, their studies are playing. They're pitifully playing. They're no slappers. Then I did the research.
And by separating, he said that plus being, you did the cause you track of time, which I called work. He called play time spent without purpose, which I called an anxiety attack. Clearly, I had a problem, so I sat down and made a list of non-work related things that I love to do where I lost track of time. And I think that's so. I think play is one big way that I like to cultivate love with myself and people in my life, including my dog. I think play is so important because it's silly, it's free, you're letting go, you don't have expectation, there's lack of stress.
Plus, when you play, you laugh, and I love your laugh.
Yeah, I think play is definitely a huge, huge important thing. So, I think we're almost at the end of our show. Thank you for listening, everyone. And I think we're going to end the show with Wilco, I'm Always in Love, one of my favorite songs and bands.
And thank you for listening. We actually have Steve and Trudy and Susan Trudy now for Ecotopia. So stay tuned after the show to discuss environmental issues. Nationally renowned authors and activists, Ecotopia. It's your local into a global folks who know and care about the health of our planet. Here on People Power Radio. KZFM 90.1, KZFR, Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the Hills, and beyond. And you're listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program.